Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Well, I didn't think you had it in you.
I'm your Huckleberry.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Why, Johnny Ringo, you look like somebody just walked over your grave.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Fight's not with you, Holiday.
I beg to differ, sir. We started the game we never got to finish. Play for blood, remember?
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
I was just fooling about.
I wasn't.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. If you missed hour one of the show, you can check it out at The Fan after the show. Subscribe on iTunes as well if you want. We have a lot we're going to get to. Jimmy Butler continues the saga in Minnesota. Spoke to Rachel Nichols. We'll bring that to you. And then a funny note that just came out about 20 minutes ago. A Minnesota Timberwolf disputing a National Basketball Reporter's tweet. Which just makes the whole circus that much better in Minnesota.
They also canceled practice today, I saw. They're not, nobody showed up.
No, Jimmy Butler canceled practice and called a players-only meeting.
Which a player actually refutes that report.
Oh, and wow.
It's a mess in Minnesota. So we'll do that. We got Damon Ewer coming up at 1:30. We'll get into that. And then the Jags. This is a story that's kind of flying under the radar. They are trying to do something that's going to upset a lot of their fans. All 24 of them. All 24 fans are going to be really upset if this happens. So we'll get to that at crunch time here in hour number two. I want to start with this. Nebraska's scared of Oregon State. Never thought I'd say it in football, but it's a fact.
They're a little fearful of the Beavs,
They're
huh?
They're scared of my Beavs.
They fear the Beavs.
They do. You may remember Oregon State has three Nebraska players that have transferred. This season, they got four-star prospect Tristan Jebbia, the quarterback. They've got the wide receiver Tyjon Lindsey, and they also have the linebacker Avery Roberts. You pair that with, I think, the Oklahoma transfer they got, Gums, I think
Gums.
Is his last name.
Gums, yeah.
So they've had a lot of transfers come in there this season. Well, the latest is running back Greg Bell, who is not happy in Lincoln, and he announced that he wanted to transfer. Hey, I want out of here. Well, Scott Frost said, no, 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 no. You can go, but you can't go to any Big Ten school. You can't go to a school we play in the non-conference, and you can't go to Oregon State. He's scared of the Beavs. How about that?
This is interesting. Now, it does need to be pointed out that it's random that it's happening this week, because on Monday, this rule goes away. It's a part of the new transfer thing that the NCAA is instituting. And so come Monday, programs can no longer dictate whether a guy can transfer to this program or that program. So if this kid actually wants to go to Oregon State, because I've seen a lot of Beaver fans say, well, how can this happen and how can he block? If the kid really actually wanted to go to Oregon State, I don't know if he does or not, he can come out, re-announce his intent to transfer next week and be free to go wherever he wants. Now, that's the positive for Oregon State. The negative of Oregon State is also a part of this new rule that goes into next week, is a heightened penalty for tampering and for contacting kids who are playing for other schools.
Oh, come on. All coaches are keeping in contact. What are you talking about?
This is interesting because it comes on the heel of sending stuff to the Hawaii players.
That was an accident.
The current Hawaii players inviting them inviting them on. Come on up. Come play Oregon State.
There was an intern fired for that, Dirt.
Sure, of course. Nothing to see here. You don't recall sending those, do you? But, you know, look, I'll say this. One, Oregon State, I think a lot of this isn't their fault. If kids are wanting to transfer, their first place they're going to look is to a coach that they know and to a coach that recruited them. And when you have a Nebraska-filled staff under Jonathan Smith of guys who recruited some of these kids to go to Nebraska, they're not happy with Frost. They want out. that's probably the first phone call they're going to make. So I don't think there's going to be any evidence of actual tampering there. And then once one of them goes and maybe gets there and says, hey, this is cool, I like it here, come play. I like Jonathan Smith, come play here. The next kid says he wants to transfer. Hey, you think they're going to send him a phone call and a text like, dude, no, come out to Corvallis. You can play right away. You can be in the Pac-12. Come build this program with us. So I understand Oregon State's angle here, but I also understand the frustration from Scott Frost.
Right.
Like, let me play the hypothetical of Gary Anderson's now at Utah. Let's say there was four guys on Oregon State's roster who were highly recruited kids who within the last 2 months all announced their intent to transfer to Utah to go play with Gary Anderson. How would Beaver fans be reacting to that?
Isn't Utah drastically different, as an example, because you're at some point going
it's
to actually
inside
play
the conference.
Them?
I
We're
get
not
that.
Play Nebraska.
I know. I'm using the former coach analogy here of a guy who recruited them, that he knows the kids, and they want to go transfer and play with that guy. If they were all going Utah out of it, say it was going somewhere else where Mike Riley was coaching at, I don't know, fill in the blank.
Right.
You would be frustrated about that.
Would
so I do understand his anger.
But okay. I think the anger is fine because I think a lot of coaches have to deal with this on a year in and year out basis, especially if you're starting over in a program. You have to worry about the talent you may lose because, one, you don't think it's quite the talent that the last coach thought, and two, they don't want to sit around and be a backup. They want to go play. I think you're always going to have some frustrations at certain levels. The problem that I have with it is he wasn't willing to put these kids in a spot where they felt like they were getting the love they deserved as the talent they are. So let's take the quarterback, Jebbia. He competed for the starting gig. You said no. You wanted to play Adrian Martinez instead. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to deal with the consequences, especially in major college football now. You pick one quarterback, the other one's probably not hanging around. Oregon's dealt with this.
It happens all over the place.
The debate at Alabama this year, we saw it at Clemson with Kelly Bryant. Quarterbacks don't want to wait around anymore. They don't want to sit on the sidelines and hope the kid gets injured and comes in. They want to go somewhere and play. Blake Barnett has transferred twice since Alabama. So I think you see this more often than not. It's also on the coach. If the coach is really going to be concerned or upset about it, you got to deal with the consequences of telling these kids you're not going to play. You're not going to start. I don't trust you on the level that I trust the other player. I just, what I would say, and Greg Bell, by the way, there doesn't seem to be any connection to OSU.
Well, Oregon State doesn't really need a running back.
Well, no.
They're pretty set at that position.
Yeah, I think talent-wise, it doesn't make sense for him, and there's no pipeline. Like, Riley's an analyst slash guy.
Yeah, and this kid, kid was a Frost recruit. He's a JC kid who Scott Frost got. It wasn't, because the Jebbia and Lindsay and those other guys.
Those are Riley, Trent Bray guys. Those are the pipeline to Oregon State. Those are, I think Lindsay, if I read right on Blitz, he has a former high school teammate that's on Oregon State's roster, or maybe that was Roberts. I can't recall, but one of those kids has a former teammate. There was a connection there. There's no connection to Greg Bell. So even though you've lost three players to one program, I'm still not understanding why Scott Frost felt the need to do this. And look, is Oregon State probably keeping in contact? I hope so. I'll be the first to tell you right now, if you get caught cheating in any sport on any level, all right, you got caught. But in major college football to win, you got to bend rules a little bit. I'm actually A-okay with them sending a letter to Hawaii, being in contact with recruits. And I know they would deny that they ever were, but reality is there's probably a couple texts go back. Hey, coach, I'm not getting any playing time. You got some spots down there in Corvallis? Actually,
we do.
We do.
My depth chart is wide open.
We need talent. Come on over. It wouldn't shock me at all. Get a little Boost Mobile burner phone and keep in contact. So,
hey, look, you know my stance on this. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, baby.
I get Scott Frost's frustration because I think a lot of coaches have it. I think he is way overreacting on listing Oregon State here.
Yeah, the main thing that Oregon State needs to focus on is there is clearly some level of tampering going on, whether it's the coaches or players that are contacting. I don't know. Just don't get caught. That's the main thing because this is against the rules to contact a kid who is currently enrolled with another program. And as I mentioned, with these rule changes coming next week, there is more of a penalty on tampering. So you just need to keep an eye on that. And I think the main story here, and maybe it's Scott Frost, it's like you're not mad at me, you're mad at your dad kind of thing. he's got an issue going on inside his program. The Jebbia one makes sense. The kid lost out on the starting job to another freshman. Like, he's not going to start anytime soon. He saw the writing on the wall. Some people want kids like that to stick around, but in this day and age of college football, those kids are going to bounce. These other ones, though, I think would be a little concerning. Like, Greg Bell, the kid who's transferring right now, he started their first three games. Yeah. He came in, he's a JC transfer, started their first three games, and now he's been basically knocked down a peg on the depth chart. And the second that happened, he says, you know what, I'm out of here.
But how many kids do we see do that in college
you
now,
see
you know?
It from time to time, but four from the same program?
Well, the quarterback, doesn't that make sense? You're a four-star
the
recruit
quarterback
not playing.
Four from the same program, though, to me would be a little concerning.
Well, how much of that is on the coach?
That's what I'm saying. Scott Frost, yeah. I'm saying I get his frustration, but he needs to look internally here of why are all these kids bouncing?
By the way, he said this today after a practice. He said, quote, it's hard for me to criticize OSU without being hypocritical, noting that he spoke with former UCF player McKenzie Milton just this week to wish him well on his birthday. So he doesn't like OSU. He believes OSU is keeping in contact. And that's a problem for him, but he's also texting other players on his former team saying happy birthday. He said, but at the same time, if someone is contacting our kids while they're still our kids, then I'm not going to be a fan of that, end quote.
Yeah, it's hypocritical. He's just wishing the kid a happy birthday. He's not telling McKenzie Milton to transfer to Nebraska.
Who's to say that Trent Bray doesn't send a happy birthday text to Jebbia or Roberts, and it just happens the kid sees the name and goes, hey, he recruited me. He liked me.
Is he sending 2 a.m. texts? Hey, you up?
hey, ready to play?
Hey, Jebbia.
You ready to go?
You want to come to Corvallis?
We need a real quarterback. we'll see.
I love when fan bases embrace this kind of stuff.
You should embrace it.
Like, I'm doing this right now with the Oregon basketball program. It's like, hey, what the hell? Everybody's doing it. Come on. You got to find a level. You got to up the playing field a little bit. We can't hang with Kentucky or Duke or North Carolina. So you got to find ways to cut some corners here. Oregon State's bringing in some studs right now.
Scott Frost says no to Oregon State potentially getting running back Greg Bell. All right, we got Damon Heward at 1:30. Husky color analyst, get his thoughts on the matchup, how it shakes up for Washington against Oregon. But coming up next, Jimmy Butler and the never-ending saga with the Minnesota Timberwolves. It took a turn this morning, and we've got audio from Jimmy himself. That's next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in 1:17. Damon Heward is going to join the show here in 13 minutes. Quite enjoyed this text. Oregon State has the best 2 a.m. text. Hey, you up? Want some beef?
I mean, that's so true, right?
Yeah, the disturbing part, well, depending on who you are, would be the name on that text.
Well, and it's finally a good-looking beef again this week. Or not this week, next week,
good
right?
Good-looking beef.
Now, when are they bringing the throw? Is that next week they're wearing those?
Next week, yeah, the homecoming game.
Yeah, hell yeah, good-looking beef again.
Yeah, I think Cal's coming to town.
Can
Let's
we make that the permanent beef?
Can we start
a petition on that?
Don't even get me started. Yeah.
Hashtag permanent beef.
I know. I tweeted them. I said, can we stop messing around with this as a throwback and just make it permanent?
Just rock it. There's a lot of I'd be cool if Oregon did that too.
One quick note, and then we'll move to this Jimmy Butler story. So I tweeted that, and I randomly had an Oregon State follower say, I don't know, man. I think the rebeef's actually helping. It's relating more to the new age player. I think you and I are too old. And I said, you know, I don't agree with that. The recruiting classes haven't gotten better since they rebeefed.
No.
Jordan Villeman, who played last year, liked both of my tweets. Yeah, bring back the retros. Former player.
You know what? I like the old beef.
Yeah, we like the old beef. All right. Jimmy Butler and the Minnesota Timberwolves are a strange story. Remember, he showed up to practice yesterday, cursed everybody out, told them they effing needed him, dominated the first team with third stringers, dropped the mic, and left. And then he left to an interview with ESPN's Rachel Nichols, who he texted about coming to Minnesota for an exclusive on this. So he knew what he was going to be doing that day. Here's first Jimmy Butler admitting to the practice blow up.
You were loud, emotional, passionate, we like to say, targeting Coach Tom Thibodeau, teammates like Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, that you told GM Scott Layton, quote, you effing need me. How would you describe what happened today?
A lot of it's true. A lot of it is true. But you got to think, I haven't played basketball in so long, and I'm so passionate, and I love the game, and I don't do it for any other reason except for to compete and go up against the best to try to prove that I can hang. So all my emotion came out at one time. Was it the right way to do it? No. But I can't control that when I'm out there competing. Like, that's my love of the game. That's raw me, me at my finest, me at my purest. That's what you're going to get inside the lines.
That's Jimmy being Jimmy. Here he is as well. I don't think this surprises anybody. We all kind of read this, and the running joke was basically Tibbs is probably having a hard-on for what's going on. So here's Jimmy Butler on Tibbs loving what he saw yesterday at practice.
Right now, I know Tibbs. He's in there by himself. He locked his door, and he's smiling. He's laughing. Tibbs, I know you, man. I know you. He's like, yeah.
You think he's happy with what happened today?
Yeah. Tibbs like me. He likes confrontation. He ain't gonna tell y'all. He likes it.
Is Tibbs in the office pleasuring himself to the idea that Jimmy Butler's so angry that he's good?
No wonder he doesn't want to trade him.
He doesn't want to trade him. Oh, it's such a disaster. Here's Jimmy Butler's reasoning for it. It's because, hey, I don't feel appreciated.
It's not about money.
So tell me what it's about.
It's about, like, saying, we need you. We want you here. We can't do this without you. And that was the disconnect all year long. Like, you're saying one thing, and you're saying it, and you're saying it, and you're saying it. I mean, I've learned enough times in life that, you know, saying something is completely different than acting upon it. Say actions speak louder than words, whatever quote you want to use. And when it came to that point, it was like, I let y'all know what the deal was as soon as you traded for me. I told you the truth from day one, and I will continue to do it. And I did it. And it's kind of like, I don't know, slap in the face. I don't know how to put it. But it made me think, like, maybe I'm not that important to your organization. That is how I took it.
So it's not money. This reminds me of the 30 for 30 on the Orlando Magic. Shaquille O'Neal went to the Lakers because, frankly, they didn't really talk to him much during the offseason and free agency. Mm-hmm. And they offered him a contract too late into free agency. So he took the Lakers deal. And the Magic were left going, oh, what? We didn't communicate well enough.
We wanted you all along, but we just didn't tell you.
Jimmy Butler saying that's the case in Minnesota.
Well, I think part of it is money. He's lying about that. They lowballed him a little bit on their offer. And I think that's something that sticks out to guys. If you don't get the same level of respect to somebody like Wiggins or Karl Anthony Towns, and you can argue he's better than both of those players, that's something that he's going to notice. So whether it's all financial, I don't know. But I do think money has something to do with it. And I think a big part of this as well, and it's something I'm sure Thibodeau's not happy about, knowing his background as a head coach, is I think there's a lot of people that are questioning Jimmy Butler himself, the desire to win for guys like Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. Every professional athlete is built differently. Everybody has different motivators when they get to that point. And if there's anything I've learned about Wiggins in his time in the NBA, is that he's more focused about himself than he is winning. Like, when you land a player like Jimmy Butler, that, to me, that would be a dream scenario for everybody. If the Blazers found a way to add Jimmy Butler and keep Dame and CJ, everybody would be thrilled, in my opinion. But Andrew Wiggins last year bitched the entire year about being a number three option. He wasn't happy about that. I want to be a number. I was the number two, now I'm the number three. I'm not getting the same amount of looks. That's where his mind was. It wasn't, wait a minute, we just added one of the best two-way players in the league, one of the best small forwards in the NBA, and a guy that can turn us into a top three team in the Western Conference. It was, I'm not getting as many shots anymore. That tells me all I need to know about where his mentality's at. And I think that's a big one for Jimmy Butler. The guy sounds like a competitive dude. I think Thibodeau loves this, and he doesn't want to be around guys who just care about putting up shots. He wants to win basketball games.
Sham Sharania said T-Wolves all-star Jimmy Butler called a players-only meeting today, airing his feelings towards the situation and management. Per league sources, Butler expressed to players he would compete with them as signs pointing to him staying with the franchise into the regular season. Jeff Teague responded to this on Twitter and added Sham Sharania and told him this is fake news. It was not a players-only meeting.
Fake news.
This did not happen the way you're describing. I don't know what's going to come to this. I don't. Scott Layden, Glenn Taylor, their own. I don't know who's going to step in. Tibbs clearly doesn't want to get rid of him. He doesn't care if half the team hates Jimmy Butler and the other half loves him. He wants to keep him. Because he knows that with him on the roster,
they're a good, damn good team.
They're a good basketball team. I believe they were the 3 seed prior to his injury.
They were number 3 in the West, and then they lost, and they fell all the way down to, what, 8? Was it, or 7?
They had that last game against Denver for the 8 seed to get in the playoffs, and they beat Denver in Denver. So he knows they're better with Jimmy Butler, but it's just a matter of, do you deal with the dysfunction and the fact that he potentially leaves? What side would you be on? In Minnesota, would you be with Tibbs or would you be with maybe the owner and everybody else saying, trade him.
If the meeting today is correct, that he's saying he wanted to have a team meeting to get all of these issues out in the open, and he's willing to work towards winning until he's dealt.
He's not talking about committing.
Then I'd entertain the notion, and a lot of it would just simply have to do with the offer. If you feel like you can find an offer out there that is better in the long run than losing him for nothing, then you take it. But right now, most of the offers for Jimmy Butler haven't been much because teams can't get a guarantee that he's going to resign there.
Yeah, that's a tough part, isn't it? It's a circus in Minnesota, and I don't know. I'm not convinced with Tibbs there, and Tibbs might get fired for this, that they're going to trade him.
And you can't have a differing message like they do, with the owner and the coach saying two different things.
Well, that's the problem with the way they're being run, is you kind of fall into that trap. All right, we will get into, at crunch time, we're going to dive into a story with the Jags, and an interesting thing they might be doing that will upset a lot of their fans. But let's talk a little Oregon and Washington rivalry with the color analyst for the Washington Huskies, former Washington quarterback. He threw it to Kenny Wheaton. Damon Heward joins the show next.
All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague. We can't wait for the big game on Saturday as we just continue to inch closer and closer to it. And what better person to bring on to talk about this great Oregon-Washington rivalry and what we're going to see on Saturday afternoon at Autzen than Damon Heward. You can find him on Twitter, at Damon Heward, former Husky quarterback, of course, the color analyst for the Washington Huskies. Damon, thanks as always for the time, man. I just want to start, about the halfway point of the season. How was the year gone for Washington as opposed to maybe how you thought it was going to go at the start of the season?
Yeah, I think it's gone pretty much how I thought it would. You know, we'd be led by our great defense, which has just been, one of the best in the country, only giving up, a little over 13 points a game. I thought offensively Jake Browning and Miles Gaskin were going to be the ones who would, make the big plays when we needed them and lead us to victory as well. And, maybe we haven't been as prolific on offense as maybe some people thought we might have been as far as putting up crazy numbers and stats and whatnot. But, we found a way to win, 5 weeks in a row now after the tough loss against Auburn, against some good competition. This is a battle-tested team coming into Autzen Stadium with a lot of experience and depth. And a team, I think, that's playing with a lot of confidence, for sure.
Damon, I think a lot of people down here, when we talk about Washington, because we got a lot of Husky fans that are down in this region as well, and you guys have been so good in the Pac-12 since Chris Peterson got there. I think we look at this team and the expectation of Jake Browning, and some people wondered, is he at the ceiling now? Can he take it the next level and take Washington over the top? And for a lot of people, myself included, I think it feels like there is a ceiling with him, and that the offense gets a little limited with his inconsistent play. I know they've won five straight, as you mentioned, or four straight going into this game, whatever that is. But how have you felt about the way that he has played in a week in, week out basis?
Well, he created kind of this issue by putting up like video game numbers his sophomore year.
Yeah,
and I think, you go back in some of those games, maybe some of the worst defenses I've ever seen in the history of college football, and it got a lot of coaches fired. With Sonny Dykes and, the 70 we dropped on the Ducks that year, and that defense got Mark Helfrich fired. A couple other, the Apple Cup. There were some games where we scored 70 points and he was throwing seven touchdowns a game, and they got him sixth place, finish in the Heisman Trophy. Obviously John Ross and, Dante Pettis, some guys playing on Sundays on the outside he had to throw to. So he created this standard of putting up these crazy numbers and all these points. Then he gets hurt, and I hate to make excuses of all this and that, but he got hurt at the end of that sophomore year. We won beat Colorado in a game he threw for like 100 yards. And everyone remembers the Alabama game where he threw the interception before the half. So he's hurt. He has off-season shoulder surgery. He can't lift weights. He doesn't do spring ball. We nurse him through training camp. And last year the numbers fell back a little bit, but we still, won 10-plus games for the first time in back-to-back years since, 91-92. So won a lot of football games, didn't put up crazy numbers. And then this year, you kind of look at his numbers, 9 touchdowns, 5 picks. But, my God, he's been so accurate and efficient. And if you really have watched all of these games, it's actually him making big plays on a third down run or a play he had to make in the fourth quarter against Arizona State. And then once again, he does it at UCLA. So if you've watched every single snap and play of this season, you would think Jake Browning's doing some really awesome things
making some big plays, helping us win football games, despite not putting up video game type numbers like he did when he was a sophomore.
We're talking with Damon Heward. He's a color analyst for the Washington Huskies on Twitter at Damon Heward, former Husky quarterback himself. And I'm curious to ask you, just the guy on the other side. I think it's a player for Oregon that is the reason a lot of people maybe like the Ducks to have a chance to win this weekend, and that's Justin Herbert, who is seemingly grown up and been very impressive this year in his junior season. What have you seen from the Oregon quarterback that you like on film?
Yeah, well, he's certainly much improved from the last time, you know, we played him a couple of years ago, and I think he started his very first game. But he truly has elite arm talent and the size, athleticism to go with it. He's a great decision maker. He keeps plays alive with his feet. He throws accurate passes, you know, anywhere on the field. Just a real complete player. You know, you look at his numbers, he's thrown for a bunch of yards. So, you know, he's a next level, you know, NFL guy for sure, 6'6" and 240 pounds. But, you know, the one thing I'll say is I'm not sure he's played against a defense like he's going to see on Saturday to date this year. You know, those first three games, you know, I wouldn't say those are, you know, very good football teams. Obviously, you know, what he did against Stanford, those numbers he put up against a good Stanford team were pretty ridiculous. But, you know, didn't get it done down the stretch of that game, did win at Cal. But he's going to see, you know, by far and away the best defense that he's seen all year. And, you know, to have any success, he's going to have to be very patient. And a lot of quarterbacks just can't do it against this Husky defense.
Where's the confidence from the Washington perspective? A lot of Duck fans are confident with Washington coming to town. How are Husky fans feeling?
Well, I think, you know, Coach Peach does such a great job with the culture, and it kind of rubs off on everybody. You know, it's like, yeah, is there confidence? Absolutely, you have confidence and belief. You can go out there and win on the road. We've done it, you know, at Utah last week, you know, at UCLA. And so, but there's always seemed to be kept in check. This team plays with a lot of humility. I think they just, it's always about that next game. And do they have confidence? Yes, but it's a quiet confidence. It's a big respect for a really good team with a really good quarterback and a solid defense themselves. So, yeah, there's some confidence, but no doubt about it, it's quiet.
Yeah, I'm curious to ask you, we're talking to Damon Heward, by the way, color analyst for the Washington Huskies. I'm curious to ask you, a number I've seen going into this game that kind of stood out just in not realizing it was, I believe Washington only has like 8 sacks this year through 6 games or somewhere in that ballpark. What goes into that? Is that just not creating enough pressure up front? Are they not blitzing maybe as much and saving some of those packages for later? What have you made of their lack of pressure on the quarterback this season?
Yeah, you know, I mean, God, there's just so many stats and numbers and things we look at today with technology, and obviously the sacks can play a big one. But, you know, this is not a huge blitz team. It really isn't. And I think they would take, you know, quarterback pressures, you know, that are not counted as a sack, but I think we have quite a few of those. But, yeah, we rush 3 or 4 guys. And like I talked about, a quarterback, you know, having to earn it, like, you better be willing to throw that check down, or you better have some guts to fire one into some really tight windows to have some success, because the back end of this defense is so fundamentally sound and so athletic and such great tacklers. And the way they pursue and run to the football is Ben Burkerv and Tevis Bartlett, the linebackers. But, yeah, if there is a criticism, you say, yeah, okay, how come they don't have 15, 20 sacks like, you know, some of these other teams? Teams, you know, they don't hold it. They get the ball out, and they've tried to run the ball. I don't know off the top of my head, but Arizona State, I'm not sure they threw the ball on first or second down versus. You know, they just think, okay, we're going to run the ball, try to get to a third manageable situation, and let's see if our quarterback can make a play. Because everything is hard-earned against this defense. You know, like I said, giving up 13.7 points a game, which is, you know, third best in the country. And that's really the only number that even kind of matters when you really break down stats on a defense.
Yeah. You know, if we flipped it to Damon, you look at the front seven for Oregon, a lot of people would say that's the bright spot of the defense is the front seven, the defensive line anchored specifically in the middle by Jordan Scott, who's having a pretty good season himself. Do you think the Huskies offensive line, though, however, is going to be able to make some creases and push around that defensive line enough for Miles Gaskin?
Yeah, you know, I think our offensive line was kind of came in as like the strength of our team you know, in the off season and whatnot. Obviously, the defense and Jake and Miles, but with Trey Adams and Caleb McGarry, two kind of bookend tackles that were all conference players a year ago, and then Trey's hurt for the season. It really shuffled a lot of guys in a lot of different positions. It moved Nick Harris from left guard to center. It moved the kid backing up Trey last year into left guard. We got a couple of kids, an Oregon kid, Jared Hilvers from Beaverton, starting at left tackle, and then another Oregon kid, redshirt freshman, Jackson Kirkland, starting at right guard. So a lot of young guys, some inexperienced guys. But, boy, I tell you, you put the tape on, they have played really well. Especially these last 3 or 4 weeks, I think they've really come together, you know, after that Auburn game and done a nice job, you know, protecting Jake and getting the running game going. I also think Bush Hamden, our offensive coordinator, has done a great job just calling the plays, keeping defenses off balance, you know, taking a lot of shots and being pretty aggressive, which I think we've kind of seen as the latest trend in all of football, whether it was the Eagles in the Super Bowl a year ago or, you know, Kyle Shanahan's offense and our guy down there at with the Rams. I mean, being aggressive on offense really keeps the defense on its heels. And with Bush and the young offensive line coming together here, it's been fun to watch. And those guys have really gelled and played hard, starting with our right tackle, Caleb McGarry, and our center, Nick Harris.
Yeah, we're talking with Damon Heward, color analyst for the Washington Huskies, on Twitter, at Damon Heward. Give him a follow as he'll be down in Eugene on Saturday calling the game. And I'm curious to ask you about the Pac-12. I mean, this is a conference coming into the year that it felt like it was Washington and then kind of everybody else maybe grouped together. And I'm wondering if that was the way you viewed it. Does that hold serve? Just what have you made of the conference as a whole so far this season?
Yeah, I think it's about what I expected. Maybe a couple surprises, obviously, in the success of Colorado and maybe the lack thereof at Arizona. You know, I think, you know, the rest of the teams are kind of, you know, they kind of are what they are. Stanford, I thought, you know, yeah, they're going to be good, but they're not the same big bad boys on defense that they had there for that stretch of really good Stanford football. So we knew that Oregon was going to be talented and they had some things rolling with their quarterback and the players back on their defense. So, yeah, I mean, maybe the South, right, with Colorado. Mm-hmm. USC kind of, yeah, they're the freshman quarterback. They're winning some games now. But, yeah, it's just kind of ho-hum. I don't know if there's a lot of surprises other than maybe the top of the leaderboard in the South.
You know, let's get to the rivalry part of this game, though, and the one that a lot of people are eating up on social media. There is a picture that's been circulating all over Twitter now for about a week and a half, and that's the picture of Jake Browning pointing in the defender's face when they were at Autzen 2 years ago when they went up and they beat him 70-21. A lot of people are pointing back to that picture and saying this is the revenge weekend, and you know what this rivalry means. You understand the feel of it. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, using something like that going into a game and kind of just what this rivalry is right now this season.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome rivalry. There's no doubt about it. And I think, obviously, whether it's on the field or in the recruiting battles, you know, it's huge. You know, it's funny. It's so different, I think, as far as bulletin board material back in the day. I mean, the only outlet might have been a newspaper and a clipping in the locker room. And now it was social media and all these other Instagram, Facebook, Snap. Like, these guys know each other, you know? They get to know each other, you know, their Facebook friends or their Instagram pals. It's like, so, you know, I don't know when someone puts a picture out there if it, like, really, you know, circulates amongst the players. And I can promise you this, they're not going to remember that, you know, when they step across the lines on Saturday. Now, if, you know, Justin Herbert scores on an option route late in the fourth quarter with a big lead, might he point a finger at somebody? Maybe, but he'll probably have to be reminded to do it as he's walking to the sideline or something. You know, I don't know. You know, it'll be interesting. It is what it is.
Do people recognize you when you walk around Autzen getting ready for the game for, obviously, the Kenny Wheaton play?
Yeah, they try to find the statue of me and look at it long and hard, and then they see me walk by. So, yeah, there are a few, I think, that that will make notice of it.
It's a fun rivalry.
No, hell no. I'm so old and gray now. Yeah, I don't look anything like I did when I was 21, so no.
Am I mistaken, too? Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe there is a very talented Heward boy up north that's getting a lot of recruiting love right now, even though he's, a freshman sophomore right now? Is that right?
Yeah, my son Sam's a sophomore. He's a young quarterback up here and doing some good things. He's got a long way to go, but he loves the game and works hard. He's in a good little program, so you know we'll see where it goes. But he's got a long way.
Well,
to go.
if you're not going to sway him to go UW, I was kind of thinking since another Husky quarterback's kid's going to go to Oregon and Hugh Millen's kid, I was thinking maybe you could show a little love for my Beavers and send your kid to Oregon State.
Well. I don't know. He would never be a duck. I know that.
Okay. Put that on the record right now. I love that. Let's get a prediction from you, man. We can't wait for this one. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Prediction.
Yeah, we got to end with a prediction. Come on, you got to get all our duck fans riled up. You know, what do you think of Saturday?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a hard fought game, a close game. I think defense travels. I think the experience we've had on the road, although mind you, back-to-back road games in this conference are tough, and we've seen that storyline. But I just think our kids are in a good place right now. We're fairly healthy, and it's going to be a close, hard-fought four-quarter fight that the Dogs win by a touchdown.
Ooh, okay. And most importantly, the wine business treating you well?
Oh, it's treating me great. Yeah, thanks for asking. Having a bunch of fun with that. Certainly the 1,500 cases a year and all of our club members.
Ooh.
And you know, just building the brand, and it's been awesome for sure.
Our bottle must have got lost in the mail then, because I haven't been able to taste that yet.
But I think I misplaced your address.
It had to have been.
You know me, your address. We'll get you a bottle
of
wine.
We will.
I love it.
Working in football and wine, man. It's hard to top that. Damon Heward, color analyst for the Washington Huskies, at Damon Heward on Twitter. Thanks as always, man. We appreciate it. Enjoy the game Saturday, and we'll catch up with you again down the road.
You guys too. Have a great night.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's good to get the trash talk going.
Have a great night.
He did. He dropped to have a good night. He's old, man. He's getting up there. He's probably already drinking a glass of wine.
Swag,
you know?
Quick. I'm like, hey, what?
Have a good night. Come on. No, it's that was fun. That was fun. He said nobody recognizes him around Eugene anymore. He, of course, infamously threw the pick. We've asked him about the pick many a time, and he's always a good sport.
You buy
about
the
it.
Finger pointing not playing a role.
No, I don't buy that at all. Troy Dye has that picture up in his locker, and he has for 2 years.
He's got the picture in his locker?
Yeah, he's had that in his locker.
Boy, that really pissed him off.
That's one. There's not many guys that played in that game still on this team. A lot of them, it's just a young football team, but Herbert died.
Do you think things really like that dictate a rivalry outcome?
No, I don't think it's going to dictate the outcome of the game, but I do think it plays a part for Oregon. They remember that stuff, man.
But does that change their execution?
No. No, I mean, you're just as focused as you would be in any other rivalry
And you're
game.
Already fired up for it because of the rivalry.
Yeah, so it was... That was fun. Damon Heward, former Washington quarterback. We're going to talk a lot about that game tomorrow and get you all set. It's going to be a fun one Saturday down in Eugene. Let's take a look in the NFL, though, quickly. The Jacksonville Jaguars are thinking about doing something that's going to have a lot of people ticked off. Tell you what that is. Crunch time next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, as low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments. I was not at the Glorious House of Gaines today.
I ain't having that. You got me? I ain't having that.
I wasn't either. My kid doesn't have school today or tomorrow for...
What?
Well, I think it's golfing weather, so the teachers go golf.
What, is it like a planned day off?
In service something.
Okay, one of those days.
Or another. I call it golfing, but...
Yeah, this is perfect golf weather. I might be sick tomorrow.
That's okay. You want out on a Friday going into the biggest rivalry game? I get it.
No, I won't. Hey, my favorite half hour of the week is coming up. Pro Football Challenge 2 to 2:30. I have made a change on how I'm going to start that segment, and I will further explain that coming up at the top of the hour.
Will you actually ever pick the Thursday game? Or?
No, we save the one for last. You know the drill.
Well, there's a couple weeks we have not done.
Well, because it's a bad game. We'll do it tonight. Interesting game. All right, let's get to this. So Jacksonville Jaguars owner Shad Khan, he's the dude with the weird mustache.
Uh-huh.
He's got that thing going on. He's like Aaron Feld. He, if you remember, he is purchasing Wembley Stadium.
Is that official yet? Is it a done deal?
He's trying to do it.
It's close to being completed, I believe. And does any big soccer team play there?
Well, the Tottenham Hotspurs were playing there while their new stadium was being built, which is just about ready to open.
So Wembley's just an empty stadium. I know the football games are there when we go, but it's not like the permanent home of anybody.
No, but they play like FA Cup games, stuff like there. But once Tottenham's new stadium is officially open, then there won't be a regular resident.
Okay, so he's buying that stadium over there. And the Daily Mail has been reporting that Khan is currently examining how to limit the taxes that he will pay in the United Kingdom to try and bring the Jaguars on a semi or full-time permanent basis to London. So basically what he's looking to do,
I hate this,
right? What he's looking to do. So he owns the Jaguars, of course, and they always play one of their games over there. I feel like every year Jacksonville is one of those teams that has to go to play in London. But what he wants to do is he wants to keep the base of the Jaguars in Jacksonville while playing their home games in London.
So this is possible from a tax standpoint.
That's what he's trying to evaluate.
Because if you think about, if he does all the home games, for example, that's only 8 weeks you're in London versus, what would that be the other?
Well, the big one he's got to figure out to get through the Players Association is how big a difference the taxation is for players.
That's why he wants the home base still to be in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Right. He doesn't want to permanently,
it's a tax-free state.
He doesn't want to permanently move the team to London, even though he wants to play their home games there. He wants the base to still be in Jacksonville so the players can get a Jacksonville, Florida tax rate.
So he needs to see the minimal weeks he can be one place versus the other and figure that out.
Yeah, so he's
sucks for the Jacksonville
This is terrible,
fans.
Right? So he's contemplating either doing all eight games in London, as you mentioned, all eight home games a year, or he's also looking at an option that could make more sense, and that is to play four games in Jacksonville, four games at Wembley Stadium. So half of their home games every year playing in London.
You know, we've talked about the international landscape of the NFL. They have a Mexico City game every year. They have multiple London games. We've seen a Toronto game. I hate this. I do not like this at all for the NFL. I get attendance numbers at Wembley have actually been pretty good. They get people to show up to these games.
Yeah, you do one or two of them a year.
What do you say to the city? You know, I know Jacksonville, a lot of people laugh at Jacksonville's an NFL market.
That's not a great NFL market.
They do have hardcore fans, right? So what do you say to those fans, especially now with the team being good? Hey, in 2 years, even if we're still good with all our young prospects, we're going to be in London for five games. We're going to be in London for half of the home schedule.
Right.
I hope you can join us in London, England, because everybody has money to go do that.
And you're wondering why he's doing it. It's all financial. They make more money on their games that they play in London than they do than when they play in Jacksonville.
What do the other AFC South teams, by the way, like take Indianapolis, Houston,
Tennessee.
What about their schedule? How does that impact where they have to fly? What is that flight? Probably a 10-hour flight?
Yeah, now every other year you have to go play a game in London if you fall on one of their four home games, potentially.
Well, no, I'm talking about a division opponent. They have to play there every year.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
If you turn that into a yearly thing, you're just talking about a lot of travel here and how that impacts. That's why I hate the London thing. If you want to do Toronto, you want to do Mexico City, be my guest. You know, I wish it would stay, but if it goes somewhere else, those other places are viable for playing, and it's not much of a difference travel-wise. London is a nightmare. That's a terrible flight for your opponent. And that has to be discussed within the NFLPA and the NFL owner circle as well. Money is obviously reigning supreme for these decisions, but this is an impact on the teams and the schedule.
Yep, so Shad Khan, he's buying Wembley Stadium currently, and he's looking at how to limit the taxes he will pay in the United Kingdom to bring the Jags to Wembley on either a permanent or semi-permanent basis. He wants to keep the team headquarters in Jacksonville to make sure the players aren't taxed at a higher rate, and he either wants to play all eight or four, half of his home games every single year over in London. Something to keep an eye on, because I don't think anybody's going to be happy about this. All right, lots to get to in the final hour of the show. We'll get back into the Pac-12 kerfuffle that happened a couple of weeks ago and Larry Scott's response to it. We got a poll question on the commissioner of the Pac-12. We'll give you the responses to that one. Take a look ahead to Thursday Night Football. Philly playing tonight in New York. Should be a good game over in the NFC East, but it's a Thursday. That means we got to start with our Pro Football Challenge. Who's winning and losing in the National Football League? We'll start there. Loaded final hour. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.